Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater and your moderator for this morning. Today is Sunday, June 14th, 2026. The share ID numbers for Friday, June 12th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,542. That's 23542. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,543. That's 23543. This morning, A Vision for You presents Mostly Not Resting on My Laurels. The 12 steps are introduced in Chapter 5 of the Big Book with these words: rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Our path is the 12 steps. It is the heartbeat of recovery. They are the heart of recovery, the heart of the freedom and happiness as a result of a spiritual awakening. And they are based on these 12 simple steps. However, the Big Book does warn us, we are not cured. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. There's a well-known phrase about recovery found in the Big Book, and it goes as follows. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. Recovery isn't something any recovered compulsive overeater can ever take for granted. Long-term abstinence and recovery involves continuous adjustment, growth, and learning. As I always like to say, we can only coast downhill. Yes, life is still challenging and difficult at times. We still encounter speed bumps, but we now have adequate shock absorbers to smooth out the ride. We are, in reality, equipped with real tools. We are now living life on life's terms. We truly have a design for living that works as long as we mostly not rest on our laurels. Joining us today to elaborate on this topic is Rachel Kay, a recovered compulsive overeater from Indiana. Rachel is dedicated to our 12-step way of life and to carrying the message of recovery. And it's with great appreciation that I welcome Rachel Kay to the line this morning. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you so much for that introduction and for basically cribbing the first part of it. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you so much. Your intros are just awesome. So, hi, my name is Rachel Kay. I'm a recovered compulsive eater from Indiana. And I'll get a little bit more into my story a little bit later on, but just to let you know, I've been abstinent and recovered a little under 26 years, but I'm hoping that today will be helpful not only to people who have some years of recovery under their belt, but also to people who are new, returning, or struggling to recover. And if it's not helpful, please come back next week, because I can guarantee you will hear something that helps you next week. Or, you know, download one of the hundreds of special editions that are available via podcast, because I promise you, you'll find at least one that is helpful. So as Leah already had mentioned, in step 10 on page 85 of the Big Book, okay, where does this phrase come from, resting on our laurels? It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And then it goes on to say, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. excuse me, give me just 1 second. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly, emphasis mine. We can exercise our willpower, highlight mine, along this line, all we wish, it is the proper use of the will. So I titled this talk, Mostly Not Resting on My Laurels, because of course I fall short of the mark all of the time. But what I'm hoping to do is to share with you some of the ways that I keep from getting a case of the epits. And you all, I think, know what I'm talking about. Whoops, I forgot to start my timer. So I will confess something to you. I was a full-grown adult until I knew what laurels were, what this expression was. Honestly, I thought laurels were like the outer part of your butt. I thought resting on your laurels basically meant resting on your butt. I happened to be in the medical profession. I took gross anatomy. We covered the entire human body. And I will tell you, not once did I encounter any part that we covered which was designated a laurel. So that's not what it is, but it is the concept of resting on your butt. Here's where it comes from, in case you're curious. The phrase resting on one's laurels comes from the ancient Greece and Rome, where successful athletes, poets, and military generals, and you can tell I'm reading this, I looked this up, so thank you, Google, were awarded crowns and wreaths made from the leaves of the bay laurel tree because these wreaths symbolize the highest achievements. A person who stopped trying to improve and just relied on their past success was described as resting on their earned laurels. And the reason why, you know, I wanted to look this up and, you know, and why I love this is it's talking about, you know, earning laurels. I don't earn anything in this program. I am given grace. This is not something that I figure out. It's not something, you know, that I earn. It is grace from my higher power, whom I call God. It is a gift. But of course, there are certain things that I have to do to be present to win in order to receive this gift. So, and I think I've said this before on a, you know, one of my shares at least, that willpower gets a bad rap in our program. It is, yes, it is useless against the compulsion to eat, against food. But it is very useful for me for doing the footwork, for working the steps themselves. And the challenge is to bring my willpower in alignment with God's will. And the good news is I do not have to do this alone. I have God to help me and literally thousands of people in the rooms who are on a similar path. So before I get into the sort of how I try not to rest on my laurels is I'd like to just tell a little bit of my story, and several of you have heard this, but I'm going to tell a little bit of it again so that you understand that I belong here, where I'm coming from. So I came into the rooms the first time when I was 15 years old in 1985, did not leave for 15 years, but never got more than, you know, 1 or 2 days of abstinence. I did get some 30-day chips, some 60-day chips. The longest period of time I had was like 6.5 months. But in general, I could not string 2 days of abstinence together. I didn't leave. I tried to work the steps. I would get to maybe step 4. I never got all the way through the steps. I didn't like the big book. I didn't understand how it applied to me. People, you know, were saying how wonderful this book was. And I looked at it and I looked at these people who lived decades before I did, you know, war veterans, whatever. I just couldn't understand how this had anything to do with me. I was lucky enough later on that I had people who illuminated it for me, who said, okay, it's not laid out into nice neat chapters like a lot of literature. And I'm not knocking, you know, our other literature, our OA literature. But for me, you know, eventually I needed the original source. That's what helped me. So, and I am a low bottom compulsive overeater. That's not everybody's experience, but I am a gutter compulsive overeater. What does that mean? That means that when I'm in the food, I cut off contact basically from everybody. I get my food around me. I don't answer the door. I don't answer the phone. And I eat like an animal until I cannot eat anymore. I do have bulimia in my story. I believe that bulimics come in sort of different varieties. Some become addicted to the purging. I did not. I hated it. But what it enabled me to do was repeat the binge cycle over and over and over until I would finally just pass out and not be able to purge anymore. So I was a fat bulimic. I thought, God, I can't even succeed in bulimia. You know, I'm a failed bulimic because I you know, was overweight. But, you know, it did keep me probably from being, you know, as overweight as I would have been. But, you know, I was just in this cycle over and over and over again. And at my, what I now see was my bottom, in retrospect, I was living, I had gone to a fairly prestigious college out of high school. I graduated almost at the top of my class in high school. And I don't say that to humble brag. I say that because there are a lot of really smart people in this program, very smart, very creative. If we could think our way out of this disease, we would. But this is, you know, my brain is not a tool. Figuring it out is not one of the steps. So, but, you know, doing that well in school, keeping it together somewhat, I was able to go to a fairly prestigious college. And that's when the wheels completely came off because nobody was taking attendance in class. I didn't show up. I could not sit down and study for 10 minutes because I would just get up and binge. I would eat. I experimented in drugs. I don't really qualify for that program, but when everybody else was done doing their party drugs and had gone to bed, then when everything wore off, I went to eat. So, you know, I tried to substitute drugs for the food, didn't work. You know, food, definitely my drug of choice. So I dropped out of school, went back, dropped out of school, went back. Finally, I dropped out of school, was working, waiting tables in Houston, Texas. I'm from Texas originally. And I had already been fired from one job for calling in fat. I didn't pick up the phone and say, hey, I can't come in, I'm fat, but I would make up all sorts of lies. You know, my dog is sick, I'm sick, you know, the cat is sick. Relative is sick, can't come in. But basically, I was just so hungover from the food that I couldn't drag myself in. And eventually, that employer, you know, said, I'm sorry you're having all these health problems or that your pets are, or your family is, but we need somebody who will show up. So I was working in another job and I was living in an apartment that this was back in 1999 or 2000. So reality TV wasn't really a thing yet. But it could have been on reality TV. There were, it was a trash heap, literally. I stopped cleaning up after myself. There were wrappers, food wrappers, dirty dishes all over the place. I mean, you couldn't see the floor because I used to read the newspaper and watch TV and binge. So there was newspaper all over the floor. The cat box, my poor cat, was just disgusting. And I wanted to kill myself. Suicide had always been my trapdoor. Things get bad enough, I will just kill myself. And I was actually looking in the Yellow Pages, for those of you who are old enough to remember the Yellow Pages. For those of you who are not, it was a big book, a directory with phone numbers of businesses. And I was looking for a gun shop to buy a gun, but to kill myself. The problem was, is that the problem was I didn't want people to find me in this trash heap of an apartment. You know, I still, even though I had kind of turned away from friends, I had broken up with the boyfriend because I basically chose food over him. But I still had people who cared about me and loved me. I still had a family. And I did not want them to find me in this disgusting, you know, literal dumpster of an apartment. So I needed to clean up my apartment clean enough so that it would be a suitable place for people to find me once I had killed myself. But the problem was I couldn't get my act together long enough to clean up my apartment. And if I could do that, if I could get my act together long enough to clean up my apartment so it was a suitable place for me to kill myself and people to find me, then I wouldn't have to kill myself, right? I'd have my act together. And that was the issue. I realized that suicide was no longer an option. And that was really my bottom. I was like, oh my God, I am just going to go on like this. There is no escape. And that's when I called a friend who lived out in California. She wasn't in the program, but she knew about my eating disorder. She didn't know how bad it was, but I told her about the apartment. And she made a deal with me. She said, you know, she and her fiance would come out to Texas and help me clean up the apartment, clean enough so that we could get a cleaning lady in there. If I would come out to California, stay with her, basically do what a lot of people now term as like the hospitalization period, you know, sort of crafted my own intensive outpatient program where I went to a meeting every day, and this program and recovery became my full-time job. I was lucky enough that I could quit my job, had a little money saved up. I realized that is a blessing and a luxury that not everybody has, but it was my rainy day fund, and I figured this is about as rainy as it gets. So that's what I did, and that's what it looked like on the outside. What really happened is that I worked the steps 1 through 12 imperfectly, and I developed a relationship with God who solved my problem, because that is the purpose of the steps. You know, it doesn't say, I always thought the purpose of the steps of this book, the big book, was to get me abstinent. Come to find out, the purpose is to help me form a relationship with a power that can solve my problem, that can solve my food problem and all my problems. And that's what happened. I basically fell in love with God. I had always believed in God, but I never trusted God. And we had sort of a, you know, talk to each other once in a while relationship. And I fell in love with God, and God became my best friend. And so anyway, to tell you a little bit about what it's like now, I'm going to now get into how I try to avoid resting on my laurels. So first of all, I try to maintain a healthy respect for the disease. So it said in the paragraph that Leah read and that I read, that alcohol is a subtle foe. My disease does not announce itself. It doesn't say, hey, Rachel, it would be a good idea to buy hundreds of dollars of food again and go on a first class binge. It's not going to do that. It's subtle. It says things like, what if you kept just the, so you got a Christmas gift from a colleague. What if you kept just the dried fruit in that Christmas basket that somebody gave you and soak it in water, and then it wouldn't be dried fruit, which I don't eat dried fruit, by the way. If you do, that's great, but it's a trigger food for me. It would just be fruit, right? It wouldn't be dried fruit anymore. You could eat it. Let me tell you, I'm not that hard up for fruit. I can go to a dozen grocery stores within a 10-mile radius and buy fruit. But that's what my disease wants to do. It's like, no, don't waste that. It's subtle. So, yes, that is something, a thought that actually crossed my mind. This was years ago. I went to, not just to my trash can, I went to the apartment complex trash, and I dumped the entire Christmas basket, including the dried fruit. Not a good idea. But that's how my disease is cunning and baffling. It's sneaky. It also says on page 58 and 59 in the big book, it says cunning, baffling, and powerful. So how is my disease powerful? On page 151 in the big book, in the part that says a vision for you, it talks about us being denizens of King Alcohol. And I had to look up denizen. So a denizen is a subject. So a subject of King Alcohol. I have learned this is not a democracy when it comes to, or king food, or king compulsive overeating. So this is not a democracy. This is not even a constitutional monarchy. You know, I have to avoid becoming a subject of you know, king food, king compulsive overeating. When I'm in my disease, I do not get a say. I've heard that expression that when you dance with a gorilla, you do not get to say when you stop dancing. That is up to the gorilla. So if I am in the disease, I don't get to, that was my, you know, that was my step one problem. It was like, okay, I will just go out and binge this last time and then I will start. And that's the thing. I don't get to determine when my last time is. That is up to the disease. If I am in the disease. So yes, this disease is powerful, but the good news is God is infinitely more powerful. But I have to have that respect, that healthy respect for the disease and its power. The disease is also, in addition to being powerful, it's progressive. So on page 32 and 33, in More About Alcoholism, they talk about this guy, it's the carpet slippers guy, for those of you who are not, who are familiar with the chapter, for those of you who are not. So this guy, you know, he had a problem with alcohol. And then he decides, okay, I have a problem with it. I'm going to give it up. He was bone dry for 25 years. Good for him. Then he retires and he decides, yeah, I can drink now. And he was dead in 4 years. The disease killed him just like that in 4 years. Since Leia started talking this morning until this moment right now at 8:51 a.m. Eastern time, my disease has gotten worse in just that period of time. Tomorrow, my disease will be worse than it was today. The day after that, it will be worse. It's just that I'm in remission. So it can be easy to forget. But my disease gets worse and worse, whether I'm practicing it or not. If I'm practicing it, it's going to get worse. If I'm not practicing it, it's still worse. It's just that I'm in remission, that I have a daily reprieve at it, as it mentioned before, contingent on me maintaining that, you know, that spiritual condition, that connection with my best friend, you know, with my perfect parent, which is God. And it's also fatal. This disease is fatal. When you see, you know, every once in a while you see like a special interest story on the news, and you see people who have turned 100 or 105, whatever, and they always ask them like what they do. I don't think I've ever seen one of those people who was 300 pounds. It just doesn't happen. This disease, however, it kills more slowly than some of the other addictions. You know, it takes a foot because of diabetes, or it takes a leg. Or, you know, because I'm carrying extra weight, you know, I have back problems or this or that. You know, it kills very slowly, but it does kill. I have a relative of mine who jumped off the top roof of his parents' house to try to kill himself. He didn't succeed. What he did succeed was mangling his body horribly. So, you know, and as I mentioned before, that trapdoor of suicide had been closed to me, but I'm convinced that eventually I would have gotten to the point where I didn't care how or where they found me. I would have either killed myself or just eaten myself to death. Now, so that's one of the ways that I try not to rest on my laurels, is to have a healthy respect for the disease. But it doesn't mean that I'm in fear all of the time, because as we learn also in step four, fear is an evil corroding thread. It just means I can't constantly wait for the other shoe to drop. I believe in my God is a loving, compassionate God. God is not going to yank my abstinence out from under me if I continue to do the things on a daily basis that keep me in contact with him. I had a sponsor one time, you know, I was talking about like, this is wonderful, this is great. You know, for the first time, I'm not in the food on a daily basis, but I'm terrified. And she said, if you continue to do the actions today that are keeping you in conscious contact, if you do those tomorrow, you will be abstinent. Basically, if I do my part, I can totally 100% count on God doing his part. So another way that I try not to rest on my laurels mostly is hanging out with people who are in the solution. So I am a very impressionable person. As I mentioned, I'm from Texas, and I don't think I have an accent, but if you put me in a room for 5 minutes with native Texans who do have an accent, you'll start hearing a lot of y'all creeping into my speech. I'm impressionable. So likewise, I believe that negativity breeds negativity and positivity breeds positivity. So I surround myself in this program with people who are on the same path as I am, who are actively trying to practice these principles in all their affairs, to work the steps. Doesn't mean that I don't have friends who are struggling, but struggling implies a struggle, that they are continuing, you know, despite setbacks, to work these steps, you know, to practice these principles, to craft a relationship, you know, with their higher power, whatever it means to them, however they define it. And one of the ways that I hang around with people who are on the same path and who are either recovered or pursuing recovery is I go to healthy meetings. What do I mean by a healthy meeting? And I may say some things here which piss some people off, which might be a little controversial, but I think we can, or at least I can acknowledge to myself, there are some meetings out there where the language of the heart is not spoken, where they are treated more like group therapy or self-help programs. That was one of the things that I had to realize when I finally, you know, people say, well, what was the difference when you finally got abstinent? I was treating this like a self-help program, and I began to see, no, this is an other help program. You know, I gain spiritual knowledge by transmitting it to other people. And sorry, Harlan, who shared, I believe, last week, but he quoted Clancy, and I'm going to quote you, is that, you know, I don't get this program by absorbing it. I get it by transmitting it. And even if I haven't worked all 12 steps, I can still be of service, and also of service to God. One thing that is helpful, was helpful, is like, I am not, how do I put this? I'm not getting a relationship with God so that I can get abstinent. I'm getting abstinent so I can have a relationship with God. There, I got it. So, but there are a lot of meetings where, you know, where people aren't pursuing recovery, where there isn't a lot of recovery, where, you know, the steps are on the wall maybe, but they're not even mentioned, where people come and talk about their day or talk about, you know, where they're in the problem and not in the solution. So I try to go to healthy meetings where higher power is talked about, where the steps are talked about. And yes, I am a big book thumper, so where the big book is talked about. Because quite honestly, if nothing else, somebody mentioned something in the big book, you know, that's a healthy meeting, because to me, that is where I find my solution. You know, if somebody is mentioning the steps, that is where I find my solution. Now, that doesn't mean that I can't go to quote unquote unhealthy meetings. Of course I can, but only if I have the express purpose of carrying the message. I can be of service. There in the chapter Working with Others on page 102, it says this: your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Now, some of you may object to that word sordid, you know. But yeah, there are some really unhealthy places out there where people are gathering, you know, as compulsive overeaters, and no one is reaching for recovery. But I can go there if I am really connected to my higher power. Because if I'm not connected to my higher power, then I can fall into a couple of traps. I can fall into retaliation and argument. And on page 67, it says, I avoid these. You know, I can go in and be a right fighter. Okay, I'm going to go in and carry the message. And, you know, yes, I can go in and carry the message, but not with the expectation of changing anybody. I can go in and carry the message because that will keep me abstinent. You know, maybe others won't hear that message, but I will be, you know, by transmitting that information, you know, I can absorb that information. And I also have to avoid, if I'm going to meetings where, you know, recovery is there, not so much, I can fall into image management. Okay, how can I make these people see, you know, how wonderful my recovery is in comparison? You know, that is pure ego. So I have to avoid that. So the next way, and speaking of, you know, transmitting spiritual information, so the next way that I try to, you know, like I say, try imperfectly, none of these things am I doing perfectly whatsoever, but the other way is to do service. On page 181 in the story, Dr. Bob's Nightmare, and if those of you who know me know that I have a spiritual crush on Dr. Bob, he talks about, you know, the four reasons why he does service. Let's see, page 181. A sense of duty. It is a pleasure because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And then lastly, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. And also because it reminds me where I've been. I have theism, you know, they talk about alcoholism, incredibly short memory. You know, I can forget even, you know, I'm in risk of forgetting even with 10 days of abstinence under my belt. Things are going great. It's wonderful, you know, but I'm an addict. I forget that my next binge is, you know, as far away as my hand to my mouth. You know, it's arm's length away. That is how far away it is. I can forget. So that's why I have to do service. That's why I have to work with other compulsive overeaters, you know, who are either new or struggling or returning. Because it reminds me, not that I'm happy that they're in the horrible place that I once was in, but they remind me, they are a reminder. So if you are new or returning, welcome. We need you. We need you because we forget, you know, a day, 2 days, a year, 2 years, we forget, oh yeah, that's how bad it was. And that's, you know, why this disease is so cunning, baffling, and powerful, because I can't recall, you know, bring up that memory instantly. Oh yeah, you know, this food, if you take a bite of this, it will destroy your life. You know, I have to keep in conscious contact with God because God reminds me. I can't remind me. That part of my memory is broken. And one of the ways that God does that is by bringing newcomers and people who are struggling into these rooms so that, you know, we can work with them. Another reason, you know, why doing service keeps me from resting on my laurels is it keeps me from being bored. Some people, you know, I've had come to me and say, you know, how do you keep from getting bored in this program? And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a sec, but give me a second, let me drink water. But doing service keeps me from being bored because I'm always thinking of ways I can better carry the message. You know, I should not be bored in this program. You know, I first sponsored the way that I was sponsored because that was easiest. Now with like different sponsees, you know, I change it up kind of depending on what people need. And so, you know, that is one way that keeps me in the solution is thinking, okay, how can I share my experience, strength, and hope? Even though, you know, I am not responsible for that person's recovery, that is between them and their higher power. But, you know, if I don't feel like someone's really getting the message, you know, I look at myself, okay, what are the ways that I can change how I'm delivering the message? So that it might be better received by them. So I can try to put their hand in the hand of God. And yeah, service takes time. It takes up a lot of time. But I like to say that it is like a part-time job. And I like to say that I have a part-time job so that I can have a full-time life. I mean, of course, all this stuff takes time, but, you know, are you kidding that the way my apartment was, it did not get that way overnight? You know, getting my apartment to be a complete disgusting trash heap with dirty dishes. And I didn't even mention, you know, the cockroaches. I had cockroaches. Yeah, that took effort. That took time. So being in the food took a lot of time. So, you know, the time it takes to be in service, and to practice, you know, the footwork that I try to do on a daily basis, it's worth it. You know, the work, yeah, it can be hard at times, but the pay is awesome. You know, it is the best paying job that I have ever had. You know, that relationship with God and not having to be in the food all the time. Another way that I try not to rest on my laurels is to mix it up a little. So yeah, doing the same thing on a daily basis. And like I say, it doesn't have to be 26 years for, you know, things to get stale. If you, you know, have been in the program, you know, for only a small amount of time, but it seems like this is kind of getting boring. I can change up my prayers. I can expand my prayer life. You know, this gets to step 11, where we seek, you know, through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. If things are getting rote, then I can mix it up a little. And in 2026, in this day of age, you know, day and age, we have an embarrassment of riches. Technology, for all its downside, has brought us websites, apps, videos, podcasts. I mean, there is stuff all over the place, which, you know, commentary on the big book, for one. I mean, that in itself would take a lifetime to go through. But also other, you know, recovery resources that I can change it up and be like, okay, not feeling it today. You know, pop in a podcast or, you know, Google Big Book. And, you know, there's all sorts of stuff out there, all sorts of tools. Now, I will tell you, and I've mentioned this before, that digital is great, but I go old school and analog when it comes to doing a daily 10-step, which is something also that keeps me from resting on my laurels. Doesn't say this in the big book, but I handwrite and I make my sponsees handwrite their assignments, except for their step 11 nightly review. But I do have them handwrite all their assignments because I handwrite my assignments. I do a daily written 10 step. I believe for me, even though typing is faster, there is something that happens when I put pen to paper that doesn't happen if I type it or if I use an app. You know, like I say, it doesn't say so in the big book, but in 1930, whatever, 1940, whatever, they didn't have apps. They weren't able to type out their 10-step or their 4-step, whatever, on a computer. So that's where I do go old school. But aside from that, there are so many technological resources out there, you know, that if I'm starting to get bored, I can make use of. I also like to talk to other people about what they do on a daily basis. And this isn't to compare so that I can feel inferior, because I can fall into that. I was talking to a dear friend in program yesterday. We were talking about comparison. And, you know, I've heard that comparison is a thief of joy. So, but, you know, I can talk with other people about what they're doing to say, wow, that sounds like a good idea, and incorporate that. I mean, I steal on a regular basis from other people, you know, prayers, activities, whatever it is, I crib from them. If it's working for them, maybe it'll help me keep that continuous connection with God, who keeps me abstinent. And then also in the big book, it talks about see where religious people are right and what make use of what they offer. That's on page 87. So even though this program absolutely does not require us to be church members or synagogue members or mosque attendees, you talk about an embarrassment of riches. There are literally millions of texts and material out there and places to go where, in a different way than the 12 steps, people are seeking God. And there's a lot of good stuff out there. And I can, and the Big Book encourages me to make use of what is offered. It may mean that I do join, you know, and have a religious affiliation. Don't have to. Nobody's going to kick you out if you don't. You know, everyone is welcome, no matter what they call their higher power, or even if they, you know, they are doubting a higher power. But there are, you know, there are so many resources out there that preceded and predated the 12 steps. You know, this is not new stuff when Bill W. put this down in the Big Book. He just basically distilled it into a way that was useful for other alcoholics, and also, you know, developed this idea of one alcoholic carrying it to another. But a lot of the principles in our steps in our program are ancient and come from other traditions. And so I can delve into those and see what they're right. Some of it may help me, some of it may not. You know, some of it is just not my cup of tea. But if it is, then I can incorporate that in my program. And that's another way that I keep from being bored and mix it up. So I'm going to stop there. I don't have a wonderful ending. I was trying to think of one as I was, you know, developing my outline and my talk. I don't have one, except that I am so grateful for Vision, for the people doing service on this meeting, for people who are listening, for people who are walking this road with me. I can't do it alone. I tried it, by the way, you know, and I have literature with pages that were stuck together because of food, because I was just reading the literature in my apartment alone and binging. So I can't do this alone. I need you to help me mostly not rest on my laurels. So I'm just so grateful. And Leah, with that, I'm going to end and pass.
That's a perfect ending, Rachel. Thank you so much for your inspiring and thought-provoking presentation this morning. We appreciate your service. The share ID for today's presentation is 23,549. That's 23549. Rachel's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so do stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to a question answer opportunity. You can pose a question to Rachel by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Sally A.
Sally, good morning.
Good morning, Leah.
Tamara C.
Nancy C.
Tamara C. Nancy C. Thank you.
W, California.
Is that Jason W?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Freya H.
Freya H.
Risky R.
Risky. Anyone else would like to get in this lineup? Okay, well, let's get started on this list. I have Sally A, Tamara C, Nancy C, Jason W, Freya H, and Risky R. So let's get started. Good morning, Sally. Thank you.
Good morning. Oh, thank you so much for this wonderful share this morning. This was a great blessing to me. And more than once, I thought, wow, she's really telling my story. My question is, have you ever struggled, even after you have established your relationship with God, your higher power, have you struggled with relapse after you found that relationship, after you could really, after you developed that friendship and that love for God? Did you ever struggle with relapse?
Hi, Sally. Thank you for the question. So, you know, as I was in this program for 15 years, believing in God, but not having really, or I thought I had a relationship, but really wasn't trusting God. And in those 15 years, I don't even know if you can call it relapse, because I was never unlapsed. I was binging almost on a daily basis. I did before, you know, this, when I got abstinent in June of 2000, I did have 6.5 months where I was abstinent, where I had established a relationship with a higher power, and then I did relapse, then got abstinent again. And so, yes, you know, at that time I had, but somehow I lost that trust. I don't know. I wish I could say, oh, it was this, it was that. I do know that, as I mentioned, you know, my disease is progressive. So when I did relapse, the force of my binges was violent. So yes, I did. And, you know, I can't say, okay, I did this and this and this, and I lost it. And then I did this and this and this, I got it, because I believe this program, you know, is based on grace. And when I got abstinent, it was grace. However, there were ways where I was not talking to other people, where I was hiding in this program. And I believe that's one of the factors that led to my relapse. So yeah, there was that time after 6.5 months, or I did, but by the grace of God, since June of 2000, I haven't had to go back into the food.
Thank you.
I hope that answers your question. If it doesn't, I would love to talk to you, because I've heard you on this meeting before, and I love your shares. So yeah, if I didn't answer your question, please give me a call.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much, Sally, for the question. Tamara C., your turn.
Thank you. Good morning, Leah. Thank you for your service. And Rachel, thank you. I just appreciate you so much. You've helped my recovery quite a bit. My question is, once you've taken somebody through the steps, and then you want to be available to take other people through the steps, how do you set it up to stay in contact with that person? Do they still call you on a regular basis, the people that you've already taken through the steps?
Hi, Tamara. I have gotten so much from your recovery. Thank you so much for your question. That, you know, I've tried different ways. The way currently I do that is I take somebody through the 12 steps and, you know, get them sponsoring, because that's a condition. It's like, okay, I will work with you through the 12 steps, but you're at the end of this, you're gonna sponsor. And then, and I'd like to, and this is just my preference, I like to talk to people on a daily basis when I'm taking them through the steps. I would rather talk more frequently for less time than have like a 2-hour chunk on a weekend. That's just what works for me and my schedule. And I feel like that's kind of effective, that, you know, that continuous or more frequent contact. But then once they start sponsoring, a lot of issues come up with sponsoring. They are probably, at least this is my experience, I was like, oh my God, this brings up, you know, this opens a whole other can of worms, because now I'm trying to carry the message. So I talk with them usually maybe the first week that they're sponsoring, we still talk every day, and then we reduce it to like every other day, and then maybe twice a week. And then once they have their sea legs and are sponsoring, then eventually, usually we talk once a week. We'll schedule a check-in once a week. With some, it's once every 2 weeks. But usually at that point, it's once a week. And that's so that I can, as you talked about, you know, be available to take other people through the steps. But I still keep in contact with them. And they, you know, I have an open door policy. Just because we have a once a week, you know, check-in call scheduled does not mean that, you know, in the middle of that week, you can't text me and say, hey, can we talk tonight? You know, it's an open door policy. It just means that I commit to be available during that time. So hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Tamara C. Next up, Nancy C.
Hey, good morning, Leah. Thank you for your service. Rachel K., thank you so much. You always are so inspiring, and I thoroughly enjoyed your topic today. I do have a question. You talked, I guess it's twofold. You talked about, you know, going to healthy meetings, and I, too, am a big proponent in that. But I also, do you go to meetings where you know they need help and show up because you might be the only big book somebody sees or ever gets in touch with, or do you stay with the healthy meetings? And then the second part of my question is that, do you have a band of sisters who are your really tried and true people that will call you on your spiritual BS or really help you if they see you struggling? Those aren't related, but so answer one or the other or both anyways. Thanks.
Thank you, Nancy, my dear, dear friend. So for the first one, I will admit this to you. So when I first moved to where I live, I really wanted to try out in-person meetings. And so for a year or two, I did attend one, which there wasn't a whole lot of recovery in. We read the big book once a week, and then, you know, that was stopped or sort of put aside, and tried to carry the message. Eventually, I did decide to go to another meeting on Saturday mornings. It was online because I was just writing too many 10 steps about that meeting. And that, you know, that's my problem. That's not their problem. That was my problem. But I, you know, I thought, okay, I've got to step away. I do go to meetings where there's not a whole lot of recovery if I'm asked to speak there. And also one of the things that is helpful is if I'm looking for a sponsee and nobody's biting, if I go to a meeting, you know, because a lot of the healthy meetings that we go to, you know, it says everybody who's available to sponsor, raise your hand, and there's like 100 hands. So there's more sponsors than available sponsees. But I can go to one of those meetings that where there's not a whole lot of sponsors and can go to that. Do I go to, quote unquote, unhealthy meetings regularly? No, I don't. I don't. I stick with the healthier meetings. But it just it doesn't mean that I can't go there, you know, if I need a sponsee or if I'm asked to speak. And quite honestly, I've had thoughts about going back to either that in-person meeting or some of the in-person meetings around here, just because I would like that connection. Right now, I haven't. For your other question, which was, oh, sisters who call me on my bullshit. My sponsor is really good at doing that. and by the way, this isn't the sponsor who originally took me through the 12 steps. God bless her, but she passed away a few years ago. But this is a sponsor that I've been working with last couple of years. Anyway, and she is really good. And I have other sisters who will. I have a dear friend in this program, and I talked about a situation with my boyfriend. And she said, you were terrible. And I mean, I laughed, but I was like, yeah, that was terrible. I was terrible. So I do. And for those of you out there, you know, who are part of my God squad, and I hope this isn't too personal, but Nancy, you're in those ranks, you know, I want them to feel comfortable to call me out on my bullshit. You know, it is great to have cheerleaders, but I also need people who are like, are you sure about that? Or who asked me about it or who share their own experience. So, I feel like I have people around me who aren't just rah, rah, but who tell me the truth. So thanks for the question.
Thank you, Nancy C. Jason W. It's your turn.
Okay. I should be unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Jason W. here in San Diego, California. Rachel, thank you so much for this talk today. It was very inspiring, very helpful. I've been reading lately Brother Lawrence, a page or two from his book, And it just so happened that in today's reading, it was in the spirit life, not to advance is to fall back. Yeah, resting on my laurels. I had a question for you because it's something that's plagued me. I'll just read it from page 164. It says, see to it that your relationship with him is right. And I'd love to hear what your relationship is that's right, what that means to you. See to it that your relationship is right, what that means to you, and some of how you got there. I know it's through going through the steps, but just if you can personalize that, I appreciate it. This is something that I'm really quite eager to have develop a relationship with God that's right. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Jason. Thanks for getting up early to listen to this. If you're in San Diego, it's early there. And I will have to check out that piece of literature that you mentioned. See that my relationship with him is right. God, and I think it's AA 12 and 12, it talks about, you know, the hoop that we have to jump through is roomy. So God does not make hard terms. And with those who seek him, I can't remember what that's from, but I know that's in there somewhere. I don't think I made that up. That, you know, my relationship with him is right, quote unquote. What is right? Well, like I say, God is very tolerant of me. I believe that right just means I'm giving it my best shot. I'm trying, you know, I am making the time in the morning, you know, more, sometimes it doesn't happen first thing in the morning, but I'm making that time, you know, to sit and talk with God. By the way, I do that for 10 minutes. I have no idea if it's meditation or not, but I sit, you know, and I pray and I try to be still. That I am doing, you know, two-way prayer or writing a 10-step, that I am trying to keep in contact with God throughout the day. So for me, that's right. You know, I'm trying. And I'm trying to do his will to the best of my ability to try to imagine what that is. You know, because I think I could probably guess what it is. I don't know for sure. But I can guess what it is, and I can guess what it isn't, too. You know, it's like, God, I know your will isn't to snap at my mom, you know, when she sends an irritating text, you know. So I think it just means try. At least for me, it just means I'm trying. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Jason, for your question. Freya H., your turn.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Freya H. In Colorado. Thanks, Rachel. Great topic. Not resting on our laurels. And I love the title that you included, almost, so that takes away the perfectionism. But that's what my question is about, is for those of us compulsive people who want to do it all and do everything and, you know, jump into perfectionism, how do you know when it's enough? Because this program, there's always more people to call, always more writing to do, always more literature. How do you know when it's enough and just be peaceful knowing that you've done enough for today?
Oh, thank you, Freya. There's somebody in this program who talks about that service or needs to pinch a little. So as far as service, and I don't think your question was just with service, but so with service, yeah, it needs to pinch a little. I need to be doing a little bit more service than I think I have time for. and that is how I determine it. Just a little more than I think I have time for, because I always have time to do God's will. I may not have enough time to do my will, but I always have time to do God's will. And as far as, you know, the other stuff, if people call me, if they text me, I try to get back to them, not always quickly. You know, sometimes job, whatever, gets in the way. But I try to, if the phone rings and I can pick it up, I try to pick it up. Even if I'm not available, I say, you know, I'm not available. Can I call you back? Sometimes, though, I have to put it on silent, you know, because I'm at work. perfectionism, I have found out to be just an outgrowth for me of ego, you know, and it's like, well, how is that? How is that ego? I always thought the ego was thinking that I'm the best in the world. And perfectionism is basically saying, you know, I'm not perfect. I have to be better. But perfectionism for me is saying, okay, I don't expect you to do all these things, but I expect me to be able to do all these things. I expect that I am superhuman and that I can do it all, and not only do it all, I can do it perfectly and never make mistakes. That is ego. That is, for me, that's lack of humility. Humility is saying, of myself, I am nothing, the Father doeth the works. So, you know, before in the last question, when I talked about trying, it's enough is, the way I determine it is, what would I imagine God would think? Does God think that this is enough? Sometimes in two-way prayer, it's like, nah, Rachel, you could pick it up a little. But sometimes it's like, Rachel, you're fine. Relax. You're doing enough, okay? It's fine. If you don't get back to that person, it's fine. And a lot of that has to do with image management, too. So I have to make sure that that's not creeping in there as well. So I hope that helps, Freya.
Thanks so much, Freya H. Risky R, your question, please.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks so much for your service. Thanks for your service. When you said a line, like this sounds very nuanced about working this program and getting a relationship with God. I don't do it so that I do. I wasn't sure if you could just repeat that and maybe just clarify what you said, you know, which line I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. Okay, let me see if I can get it right on the first try this time. I don't develop a relationship with God so that I can get abstinent. I get abstinent so that I can develop a relationship with God. Now, that, as I'm saying it, I realize, okay, that can be misleading. How am I going to get abstinent without God? But I will borrow something and change the words around from a past president who said, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I think that's kind of where I'm going with that phrase. So maybe the phrase that I said isn't the best way to put it. You know, ask not what God can do for me. You know, ask not what God can give me, because then I get into, you know, Santa Claus God. God, I want this and this and this. Ask what I can do for God. What can I do for God today? You know, I want to stay out of the food so that I can do stuff for God and do stuff for God's kids. You know, that has to be my motivation, not, okay, God. Now, does that mean that I can't cry out to God for help? Absolutely not. I do that all the time. You know, certainly when I was first getting abstinent, God, please help me, please help me, please help me. And I still do. There are situations where I'm just like, God, help me, please God, help me. Absolutely. But I am asking for that help. I have to look at what is my motivation. You know, is it so that I can be glorified and so that people will think that I'm super cool? Or is it so that I can glorify God? So I hope that helps.
Thank you, Risky, for your question. We still have time for additional questions. You can pose a question by pressing *1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Donna J.
Donna J.
of EV.
Is that Havivi?
Oh, Avi, A-V-I.
A-V-I, thank you.
Anayeta.
Anayeta.
Sarah N.
Sarah N.
W-E-V.
Repeat that, please.
Joy M-B.
Joy M-B, thank you. Anyone else?
Sierra K.
Sierra K. I don't know if I have
Sierra
that correct.
K.
Sierra K. Okay. Terrific. Anyone else? Final call for questions. Okay, I'll take that as a no. Let's get started. Donna J. Go ahead, Donna. Donna J, star one to unmute.
Sorry, I thought I was unmuted. Okay. Hi, I'm Donna J from Reno, Nevada. And thank you, Rachel, so much for all that you've given me today. I really, really am absorbing it. I would just like to know how you handle, like, what your process is for toxic outreach calls. When there's someone who's just been in the program just for a long time, and they're like you said, hiding in the program, they're not really working the steps. They're not doing what you're talking about today. But they are needy, and they just kind of, I don't know, it's an emotional vampire. How do you process, what's your process for dealing with an outreach call like that? Thank you.
Hi, Donna. That's a really good question. So I can only share my experience. I have learned, and this program teaches me, that if I keep it in the eye, that I can't go wrong, because my experience is my experience, right? I'm the expert on it. Not the expert on how to, you know, get abstinent and get recovered, but, you know, I can say, well, what worked for me is blank. Or I have found that blank. And I can also go to the book and be like, you know, I try to focus on whatever. And let them, you know, if they go on with the negativity, then I can let them. And then at a certain point, I don't stay on the phone with them, though, all day. After, you know, an acceptable amount of time, I could say, you know, thank you so much for calling. I would love to connect more another time, but right now I'm going to have to get on with my schedule for the day. You know, I try not to lie and say, oh, you know, it's time for me or whatever. Just say, you know, but I need to get on with the rest of my day. But thank you so much for calling. You know, let's connect again. So I keep that channel open. But yeah, that's kind of what I do.
Thank you, Donna J, for your question. Avi, your turn. Star one to unmute.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for this. I really appreciate it. This is Avi from Vancouver, BC, recovering compulsive overeater. I listened to a podcast this week that said something to the effect of, if we rest on our laurels, we'll be greeted with, welcome to McDonald's, may I take your order? And that's one of the things that happened to me on Sunday night, that I experienced a horrific, horrific binge and full-on relapse. And it was the first binge of that nature that I've had in recovery since I've come into recovery. And it was like something possessed me, something had a hold of me and wouldn't let go of me until it was completely done with me. And it was her, and there was no God in that. There was no God at all. And my question is, how is it that we, and I count myself as part of that, who do the disciplines every single day, and I know we have that main strange mental blank spot, I know the broken bridge, I know all of that, but how is it that there's absolutely no feeling, concept, connection with God once that disease has hold of us? And I don't know, how do we strengthen that so that never happens again, if that's my question. And I just adore speaking with you. Thank you.
Hi, Avi. Thank you so much. Thank you for your honesty. You know, I am sending a hug through the line. I'm sorry that you went through that painful, painful, painful experience on Sunday. I don't know. I can't keep it from ever happening again. What I can do is and I can't keep it from happening today. God can keep it from happening today. I have to focus on today. Okay, today, what can I do? Today, how can I keep in contact with my higher power so that today, you know, I can tune into God's strength if that compulsion to eat hits. I cannot look to the future. You know, I actually attend a meeting that's called Focus on Permanent Recovery. So I do believe that that's possible, but I can only focus on today, you know, and I don't know your particular experience, you know, what happened before Sunday, but I am of the belief that this is a disease. It is not my fault. It is my responsibility to, you know, seek the cure, but I do have a disease, and the disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. But it is my responsibility just for today. Tomorrow is up to God. What can I do today? Or sometimes when I first got abstinent, I had to, a day, 24 hours was way too long. I had to focus on what can I do this hour, God, you know, to just, what is the next right thing to do? Because the next hour is up to God. I had to narrow it down that much. So I hope that helps. And please feel free to give me a call.
Thank you, Avi, for your question. Hanayeka, your turn.
Good morning. Thank you, Leila, for your service. And Rachel, first of all, I have to say, what an awesome share. I really appreciated everything you shared. When you speak, I'd love for you to tell me where in Texas you were from. But I like to think of it as serving God. When I serve God, you know, what do I have to do? And so my question is, when you're serving God, well, you were talking about what goes first, you know, the chicken or the egg, the abstinence or serving God. And, you know, it's kind of a catch-22, and I think it's almost we have to do both at the same time. But how do you maneuver yourself when it comes to, you know, is abstinence the most important thing in your life, or is God the most important thing in your life? I guess maybe that's a good question. Thanks.
Hi.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, thank you. Yep. Hi, Hanayeta from Plano. I'm from Arlington originally, so I was your neighbor. That is a much easier question to answer than your second one, quite honestly. There is a whole debate, you know, is abstinence come first or is God come first? It is a chicken or the egg. And I try not to get into that debate because to me it's almost like semantics. You know, I try to put God, if I don't put God first, then everything else is going to go by the wayside. But, you know, I have no problem if people want to say that abstinence comes first in their life. I've got no issue with you. So I try not to enter the debate with that. I feel like as long as I'm working the steps, as long as I'm trying to keep that relationship with God, what I call it or how I characterize it, for me, doesn't matter. For a lot of people, that question is very central and important. But for me, I don't try to decide or debate within me because then I get into head games. So I know that's not a very good answer, but I hope it helps.
Thank you, Hanayeta, for your question. Next up, Sarah N., your question, please.
Hi, this is Sarah N. from Sacramento, California, and I don't know you, but I would like to. What an incredible share. Thank you so much, Rachel. And I've gotten so much I need. The thing, I don't know how well-formed this question is, but what it's the progressive nature of the disease is so baffling to me. like that it could, that I could be doing this much work and that somehow it's getting worse at the same time. But I have my own personal scientific experiment on that is 20 years in OA, where in the definition of abstinence for me, we had in my sponsorship line, my abstinence was no binging, and the definition of binging was eating a real lot of something and getting up and doing it again the next day. And the first year... I'll get to the question. The question
is... Thank you so much.
Can you say more about... do you have any idea why it progresses or anything we can do to make it not progress? How can we work that hard and it's still progressing? And I guess if we don't know, how do we deal with that emotion?
So the very last part of your question got cut off. You said, and if it does progress, how can we deal with, what did you say?
How can we do,
Tara?
Excuse me. How can we deal with it emotionally if we don't really understand why it's happening and we have nothing we can do about the progressive element? How do you deal with it?
So I don't know why it's progressive. It's so, you know, and I'm sure, you know, there's been research done. I know that it is, you know, it's accepting the things I cannot change. I can't change that this is a progressive illness. And how I deal with that fact is, you know, moving forward. Leia said, I think in her intro about I can only coast downhill, that my 10, 11, and 12, people call them maintenance steps. For me, they have to be the growth steps. You know, I have to, if my disease is progressing, then my recovery has to be progressing. And I don't know why it gets, you know, the disease gets worse and worse and worse, but it's just sort of like, you know, the rain. I can't argue with it. I pack an umbrella, you know, I just accept that, okay, that's the way this disease is. I could have a lot of other diseases where there is no cure, where I don't know what, you know, not that we ever get cured, we just get a reprieve, but there's diseases out there where there's nothing we can do. Nobody knows what we can do. If I have this progressive disease, at least I know where to go for help. You know, God, you know, thank you for the people who came before me who outlined this, that at least I have a disease where there is hope. So hope that helps.
Thank you for your question. Joy MB, your turn.
Good morning. I'm Joy MB from California. I'm so grateful to you, Leia, for all that you've contributed. Thank you so much. And to you, Rachel, what a blessing you are on this Sunday morning. You've helped me move ahead in my understanding of the program and my relationship to higher power. Just my question. There's all this debate going on about how long it takes to take someone through the steps. It's my opinion in my work that it takes different times for different folks. And if one of my sponsees seems to not be getting it, I say, let's go back. Let's go back and let's reread. Let's read and let's talk about it, because I don't want to send somebody out to the field who hadn't got it, because I was sent out. I was sped through the steps twice. Didn't get it. Cost me 60 pounds and a lot of time. So do you have any thoughts about that? Thank you.
Thank you, Joy. I do try to get sponsees through the steps quickly. I don't have a certain number of days or weeks. It kind of depends on them and their higher power. You know, if it doesn't seem like there's a principle, you know, and by principle I mean, you know, steps that they are grasping, then, you know, we spend more time on that step. But I try not to hang out too long on a step and try to make sure that they've got it perfectly. Because in step 10, we get to do 1 through 9 over and over and over again. So if it's not perfect, that's fine. You know, do you think you've turned your life and your will over to God? Yes, I think so too. Okay, let's get on to the inventory. So the reason for taking them through the steps more quickly than hanging out on steps too long is to get relief. Well, for two reasons. Number one, so that they can get relief, because God, it's hard to stay abstinent in, you know, the first days, months. I mean, we go, at least for me, I went through physical withdrawal. Some people don't, but I went through physical withdrawal. So let's, you know, I want to get my sponsees some relief, that relationship with God. And also so that they can sponsor, because sponsoring, you know, it says nothing ensures immunity from this disease so much as working with others. So, but I certainly don't want to rush them if, you know, if their head is still clouded with the food, you know, if they're going back to the food. I feel like there needs to be some clarity, some cloud lifted before we get to steps 4 and 5, before we get to the inventory, and certainly before we do amends. So hope that helps.
Thank you very much for your question, Joy MB. And our final question for this morning comes from Sierra K. I hope I got that right.
Hi, Sierra K, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much, Rachel. This is my second a vision meeting, and I am at a point in my recovery where I'm like noticing that I've, you know, the reason I didn't have the solution is because I wasn't in the big book. And I have an in-person meeting that is a long-established OA meeting, but I don't hear a lot of recovery there. So my question is, as a newcomer, I want to, you know, I struggle with self-righteousness. I don't know how to move forward with either letting go of being around those people who are not in recovery, or, you know, I just don't know what God wants me to do. What would be your approach or suggestion for a newcomer in regarding to receiving recovery? I don't know exactly how to phrase this, but what would you do? I guess is my question. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Sierra, and welcome. Glad you're here. I don't necessarily think there's a right and wrong answer. You know, I think if you are, and I can't give advice, but okay, if it were me, if I could go, you know, just having gotten abstinent or in recovery, if I could go to a meeting where I wasn't hearing the message and stay out of self-righteousness, you know, stay connected with God and go purely, you know, what can I contribute to this meeting? You know, and it's a good idea, no matter if I'm a newcomer or not, what can I contribute to this meeting? If I can do that, then I would go. You know, it's nice to go to face-to-face. If, on the other hand, I feel shaky, you know, another part in the big book, it talks about hanging out in bars, you know, and it's like, you know, if you can go and you're not shaky, go. Granted, we're not talking about hanging out in a bar. We're talking about going to an OA meeting that's maybe not the healthiest one. But if I can go, you know, and be of service, then great. If not, then it says in the big book, I better work with another alcoholic. And just because you're new doesn't mean that you can't be of service. You know, you can be of service on meetings, on healthy meetings, by if they need a reader or whatever. You can make outreach calls. You know, if you've been in 2 days, you can call somebody who's been in 1 day. So I think it depends on my spiritual condition. If my spiritual condition is shaky, then I might want to stay away and go back when I'm feeling a little bit more connected and like I'm not going to get into self-righteous anger. So hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Sierra K, for your question, and welcome to you. I want to thank everybody who posed questions this morning, and of course, thank you so much, Rachel K, for your inspiring and helpful presentation this morning. It's been a delight to spend time with you. The share ID number for today, 23,549. That's 235. Close this morning from page 164 A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until